quarterback joins us now, Bernie Kosar. And Bernie, a lot happened over the last few days in Arizona at the league meetings, back from those now. We talk first of all about rules changes, and the biggest one, and the one that Browns fans are going to be all over, is the no contact with the crown of the helmet, that will draw a penalty now, and that would include running backs. And the example that's being shown over and over and over again is that monumental collision between Trent Richardson and Kurt Coleman, who lost a helmet in the process.
Well, first, if I was Trent Richardson and I've or his family or agent, I'd be really excited to have watched that highlight 1 million times over the last week of watching that hit. And Kurt Coleman, and if the fans don't remember, he stayed in the game after that crushing hit and made the tackle on the next play, which I think is even more impressive. And again, I don't, you know what? The rule, I'm highly conflicted on this rule, and I understand the principle of it, and I really admire the league and what we're trying to do in terms of player safety. So I get all that. But at the end of the day, it's still football. And, like, even the Trent Richardson hit with Kurt Coleman, we could slow down, we could do this slow motion, and it looks like it's one-on-one with Kurt Coleman. But if you really look closely, there's a linebacker 3.5 to 4 feet on his right and his left, which in real time, with the speed and athleticism of these athletes today, that's not that big a deal.
Right.
And now you're going to tell, like, look, the goal is not to use the crown of your head. That's not what Trent wants to do. That's not what Kurt Coleman wants to do.
Yeah.
But in a violent sport where 0.02 of a second, things have to be decided and natural reflexes happen, you know, bodies get in certain positions and violent things happen. And it's easy to do it and talk about it in slow motion, but the game's not played in slow motion.
No.
It's faster and more physical, I think, than it's ever been. And that's a tough spot to make kids, players, kind of think twice and keep your head up. And does that mean now you're going to get your knees chopped out and you need ACL surgery or reconstruction? I understand the principle, but in reality, again, I'm not somebody who was ever fast enough to even do something like that, but I have a real problem with it.
On the Rebel Wireless Hotline with us, Bernie Kosar. And Bernie, yeah, I think that's part of it, and how the player is going to handle it and be conscious of it. But I think about the officials, and I do think about that guy with the flag in his pocket wondering about pulling that flag out after Trent Richardson or somebody has ripped off a long gain and then penalizing him for making that contact, or at least perceiving that his head was too low and was in that position and he made contact with the crown of the helmet, and now it turns into a 15-yard loss.
I'm not just saying that. I agree with you. And I'm not just saying this because I'm an offensive guy. Okay, I feel the same way in reverse on the defensive guys. Even, I know this, I don't want to sound like the Antichrist of this, but the Steelers, James Harrison, these guys got a lot of fines over the last few years, some of which are against the Browns. In real time, in the speed of the game, when bodies are moving and 6-7 inches of ducking your shoulder, ducking your head, or raising up is the difference between using your helmet or not, or making contact with the helmet, it's just not easy to do. And the goal isn't to use the top of your head defensively nor offensively, but it sometimes happens. And that's one of the, and again, I'm not, if the kids are out there, the mothers for listening, it's one of the beauties of the game. And it's physical, and just sometimes, like life, stuff happens. But if I'm a coach, to your first point on it, I really think you got to tell your players to don't think about it and play your game and let your natural athleticism and football instincts take over. Because if you start thinking on the field like that and you're avoiding contact or you're letting up, or you're not going 100%, or you're overanalyzing something in a one or two one-hundredths of a second thing, I think you have a higher propensity, a higher likelihood of getting hurt then. So I'd rather just be the coach screaming at the official and do my lobbying, but I wouldn't want my players thinking about it, because I think you'll mess up plays and have a higher chance of getting hurt.
Another big rules change was the elimination of the tuck rule. Little overdue, I guess, on this one, if you're the Oakland Raiders going back 11 years for this thing, right? 2002 playoffs, when you had the call that was made that people scratched. And I was at that game. I was covering that game for NFL.com. I was standing in the, down on the field at that point. It was late in the game and wondering. And I remember hearing some Massachusetts state troopers who were at the game. In uniform, and they're looking at monitors like everybody else, and they're saying, everybody was looking, saying, this is a fumble, right? This has got to be a fumble. And I said, not so fast. I said, just the way, how much time it was taking. And I can vividly remember this. So now the league decides to do away with this kind of judgment call of whether a quarterback is being hit and fumbling. And again, you speaking as a former quarterback, what do you think about this, and why so much time to finally eliminate it?
Okay, I want to not sound like a baby whining here, and I want to be politically right, calm, the new me, very calm, and try to be fake like I'm professional. I never got that call, and I lobbied for it, so I hate the rule. It's a fumble. It was a fumble then. Come on. I mean, it should have been gone. It should never have been a rule. It should have been gone years ago, and it was a fumble. I mean, it just was. And as a quarterback, look, I love all those little extra rules that, I tried to lobby the refs, anything you could get during a game. It's all fair and love and war in football out there. So you do what you do to try to win. But at the end of the day, it's a fumble, and it's the right decision.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. I don't know why it took this long to get there, but when you think about this too, Bernie, how much history could have changed if John Gruden's Raiders win that game and you don't have the start of a Patriot run or dynasty. And I'm not going to say the Patriots wouldn't have gotten something going with Tom Brady and so forth, but let's face it, that was a defining period of the history of the league.
Look, this is one of the unbelievable things I try to tell myself, teach my kids, and anybody who wants to listen to my over-talking, is it's the beautiful thing about life and football is you're so right. I mean, you could take that domino even farther. Okay, yes, with New England and all that stuff and Tom Brady and Coach Belichick and that and the New England franchise, but look at the ramifications. John Gruden doesn't get fired from the Raiders. He doesn't go to Tampa. Tressman and Coach Callahan were the coordinators out in Oakland at the time of the tuck rule. They probably get the Tampa job that gets the cream team that gets to win the Super Bowl a year or two later. Those things don't happen if the call goes the way it really was, because it was a fumble. I mean, even Tom knows that was a fumble. But the rules broke the right way for him. And the ramifications of sports, where you could have 99 things go perfect, and you could do them great. And I don't want to get over into this, but, I love Ernest Biner, and he's been a phenomenal player. But one play doesn't go right, one thing, and it could change not only your life and your whole family's life, but that domino of how the things go across the whole league of just one singular play or one singular decision. And that kind of goes back to your first question, what we started out talking about. Okay, a fumble, a mistake, that's one thing. But a referee's decision because a running back lowered his head to not get his knees clobbered or not to get wiped out by a 265-pound, 4-5 running outside linebacker, and you get a 15-yard penalty, and it changes the course of a game, a W or an L, do you go on or not? And with the way the game's going now, a win and a loss, how far are you going to playoffs? Do you go to the playoffs? The ramifications of all the jobs and that it entails, not only just for the coach, you know, the whole staff. We've seen it a ton in Cleveland, that how many different people's lives are changed by a couple wins or not a couple wins. It's an amazing, fascinating thing for me to pay attention to.
Bernie Kosar joining us, as he regularly does here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford via the Revel Wireless Hotline. And Bernie, obviously, we can say there are kickers, and then there are guys who kick in this league for a long time and do it well. In 14 years, that's what Phil Dawson did for the Browns. He is now a member of the San Francisco 49ers. Want to get your reaction on his leaving the Browns and joining the 49ers via free agency.
Again, I don't want to be waffling on both sides of the fence here, but you've definitely mixed emotions. First, you hit it perfectly. 14 years, a fantastic, consistent, dominant player and point scorer and really leader for the Browns in a lot of bad years. But his consistency and professionalism was phenomenal. So part of me wants him just to stay here, and he's still kicking at the top of his game. I mean, to be able to kick as many north of 50-yard field goals as he's had the last couple years is incredibly impressive. When that was year 13 and 14 for him, now coming up to 15. So he's kept himself in phenomenal shape.
Mm-hmm.
Frisco, I could understand, though, at his stage of his career, and his represented by a great friend and a person I highly respect in the league, Neil Cornridge from Cleveland. You know, at that his age, and I know I went through this, of wanting to be on a team that has that chance, and Frisco is loaded with young, talented players. They got a lot of draft picks. They've signed some free agents. I could understand, though, wanting to maybe give it a go towards the end of his career with a team that appears loaded.
Yeah, I think that's probably a thought certainly for him. From the Browns standpoint, again, understanding where they are relative to where a team like San Francisco is, and I think the investment in it's younger and it's different positions other than kicker. It's kicker's important, but I think there's been history where you can, you know, reach a point where you get to an older kicker and then you could say, we'll go younger at that spot and then concentrate and focus free agent money on other places. I know it's not the easiest thing for Browns fans who love this guy and who didn't love Phil Dawson to hear, but I think you're now looking at reprioritizing what you're doing with the revenue, the opportunities you have to make your team better.
Well, you're exactly right. That is how, as Browns fans and organization, we have to look at it now after the decision. But, and I'm not saying this to be a homer or cover for anybody within the Browns, but again, when you look at the one-year contract and you look at the salary, the Browns would have gladly paid that. It's not a Browns issue. This is, I really think, a personal issue of Phil, mm-hmm. that, you know, he's going to a team that was in the Super Bowl last year, that's young and talented, and the only part they were really weak in was their field goal kicking. So I'm not even sure the Browns could be, they can't be blamed for it. I mean, it's a personal decision by Phil, I think, and I can't blame him as much as I want him to stay, and I'm not sure how I would have made this decision, because he's had 14 great years and the staple of the new Browns coming back. But I think the opportunity for him to try to go through the playoffs and try to be a Super Bowl winning, get a Super Bowl ring, is, I think, the more bigger issue for him personally.
Right.
And now the Browns have to do exactly what you said, but I'm not sure the Browns could be blamed at all, because, again, it's when you see these type of contracts as you become an older player, the Browns have plenty of money and plenty of cap room, and his consistency was there to do it. But again, him personally, he had to make a decision that, you know, when he's older like us, he has a chance at a Super Bowl ring.
Browns are going to have a personal workout, a private workout with Geno Smith, the West Virginia quarterback. What do you think that means?
Well, I enjoy watching him play. I mean, the way he throws the ball, you know, his physical presence, his size and athleticism. You can't even, you know, I wish I had 30% of what he has. I mean, it's just beyond brilliant. I have doubts and concerns with, you know, because we had the kid a couple years ago from West Virginia who wowed us in mini camp and wowed us early in training camp, and then was horrible when the bullets were flying and real fire. And that's the tough thing about quarterbacks. You know, until he really, I mean, you talk about this all the time, until there's the threat of death and that 300-pound guy running you over, you just can't simulate that and how you react under pressure. So workouts, Geno's going to be great in these workouts. He's going to look great. He's going to throw it good because no one's going to run him over. So you can't really tell because the college game that he came from, you have to extremely expedite your decision-making and your accuracy because you're not going to get 6-7 seconds to throw a post where the guy's 7-8 yards wide open. It just don't happen in the NFL.
Well, Bernie, great rundown as always, and we'll catch up again next week.
Sounds great.
He is Bernie Kosar, the one and only, joining us as he always does right here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty 40s on the Revel Wireless Hotline. And we've got much more coming up on ESPN 850 WKNR.